that the individual Han Solo is likely in possession of the droid that is the subject of a search by the First Order, and that it and Solo together with an unknown number of allies are presently aboard the vessel known as the Millennium Falcon. Destination unknown. I hereby lay claim to any reward that has been established for information leading to recovery of said droid by the First Order.
He closed the contact. It was out there now. What he knew and his claim. He could do no more. And until he could either get his own vessel up and running, or pay for someone to come out to this hulk of a freighter and pick him up, he was stuck here. With, he reminded himself uneasily, as the sound of a distant banging and tearing of metal reached him, an unknown number of surviving Rathtars.
Chapter 10.
The information arrived at the resistance base on Dakar, coded and encrypted. Ordinary transmissions were simply ported directly to the relevant parties. Those intended for general distribution were not even encoded. But when something of specific importance, intended for a highly restricted audience, came in, it loaded at only one location. Sometimes something as simple as mere physical separation provided the best security. Lieutenant Brance saw the telltale come to life on his workstation. It took scarcely a second for it to flip from red to yellow, and then to green, as the transmission was received, decrypted, and reduced to a comprehensible hard copy. Pulling it, he scanned the message. His eyes widened. Leaving the station, he took off on foot, down one tunnel, into another corridor, ignoring everyone else as he searched for the message's recipient. This time of day, he was confident he knew where to find her. The passages through which he ran were crammed with all manner of equipment, sometimes carefully installed, other times slapped together in haste. It was nonetheless all functional. Despite the crowding, Brance knew there was not nearly enough of it. There was never enough. The indigenous growths that pushed their way into the tunnels were only a reflection of the camouflaging forest above the base. Mindless and unthinking though it might be, the native plant life was in its own way an active participant in the resistance. He found the general where he expected her to be, conversing quietly with Captain Snap Wexley and an attendant droid. Leia Organa wore a dark vest over a simple blue-gray jumpsuit that was devoid of any indication of rank. Folded sleeves halted at mid-forearm. The color of her boots matched her vest, and a belt of some dark material was threaded neatly through a silvery buckle. Save for a single longer braid, General Organa's gray hair was bound up in a ring that outlined her head. Despite her lack of uniform, no one would mistake the petite woman for anything but what she was, a princess and a general. All three looked up at his arrival, and he passed her the hard copy. He knew that if the general wished to keep the information restricted, she would have said so the instant he had handed it over and would have already dismissed Wexley. After giving her a moment to scan the content, Brant said, "General, as you can see from the details in this recent transmission, the community on Jakku was wiped out. First Order stormtroopers." Brant glanced at Wexley. "Lor San Tekka was killed." She did not respond, but instead continued to study the readout. There was additional information: time of the attack, duration, number of assailants, descriptions of the weaponry they had employed. All of it incidental to the sobering consequences. The tactics team would break down the details and note anything useful. What really mattered was what wasn't there.
"If they get to Luke first, we don't have a chance," she murmured. A new thought forced her to ask, "Anything else? Anything I'm not seeing here? What about Poe Dameron? They found his X-wing destroyed. Angle and depth of the blaster marks suggest it was blown up while still on the ground. Definitely First Order. The locals don't have access to that kind of weaponry." His expression tightened.
There's no indication he survived. It looks like we've lost him.
Leia's expression tightened.
If they continued to lose fighters like Dameron, the Resistance would have no hope against the First Order.
She forced herself to continue reading through the other half of the detailed report.
There's no mention of BB-8.
Brantz nodded at the readout again.
No, General. He wasn't recovered. Our people on Jakku who prepared the report say that he likely perished along with the X-Wing.
She looked up.
Never underestimate a droid, Lieutenant.
She looked to her right.
While some of them are specialized to an extreme degree, say in linguistic capabilities, others may converse in simple mechanical languages, but possess hidden skills. BB-8 is such an example. In the absence of identifiable remains, we may retain hope.
She fixed him with a gaze that had withered the less resilient.
Or are you ready to give up now?
No, ma'am,
he said zealously. General Organa turned to the droid in attendance. In sharp contrast to one arm that was a dull red, the bipedal machine's reflective golden torso gleamed from a recent cleaning.
C-3PO, you've heard the information from Jakku. Locate BB-8 immediately. You know what to do.
Nodding slightly and gesturing with the red arm, the protocol droid responded without hesitation.
Yes, General. Of course. The tracking system. Oh, dear. This is a calamity.
In another room, Corsella, Leia's personal envoy, awaited the General's arrival. The young woman wore her hair back in a severe bun, and her dark green uniform contrasted notably with the General's more subdued attire, as did the badge that identified her as a commander. As usual, Leia did not waste time on small talk.
You need to go to the Senate right away. Tell them I insist that they take action against the First Order. The longer they bicker and delay, the stronger the Order becomes.
She leaned toward the other woman.
If they fail to take action soon, the Order will have grown so strong, the Senate will be unable to do anything. It won't matter what they think.
Sela indicated her understanding.
With all respect, do you think the senators will listen?
I don't know.
Leia bit down on her lower lip.
So much time has passed. There was a time when they were at least willing to listen. And of course the Senate's makeup has changed. Some of those who were always willing to pay attention to me have retired. Some of those who have replaced them have their own agendas.
She smiled ruefully.
Not all senators think I'm crazy. Or maybe they do. I don't care what they think about me. As long as they take action.
The emissary nodded.
I'll do all I can to ensure the Resistance gets the hearing we deserve. But why don't you go yourself, General? An appeal of this nature is always more effective when delivered firsthand.
Leia's smile thinned.
I might make it to the Senate, yes. I might even be able to deliver my speech. But I would never, never get out of the Hosnian system alive. I would have a terrible accident, or become the victim of some deranged radical. Or I would eat something that didn't agree with me. Or encounter someone who didn't agree with me.
She composed herself.
I have total confidence in you, Sela. I know you'll deliver our message to the full extent of your considerable abilities.
The emissary smiled back, grateful for the confidence the general was expressing. In a little-used conference room, C-3PO leaned into the shadows to murmur anxiously.
I've never needed your help more than now, R2.
The squat droid he was addressing sat quietly in minimum maintenance mode, without so much as a single telltale blinking.
How can I have committed such a devastating oversight? When we sent BB-8 off, it was my responsibility to perform his final checkout, which I did in the most excellent and approved fashion. Except...
If a droid could have fallen to wailing, C-3PO would have done so on the spot.
I forgot to activate his long-range tracking mode. I must have assumed he would always be in the presence of that pilot, and that therefore there would be no need. I deserve to have my memory wiped. Oh, R2, what am I to do? I wish you'd finally wake up. I need you now.
Only an occasional beep sounded from the smaller droid, indicative of his present dormancy.
What would your advice be? No doubt you'd have an opinion about sending a general alert to all our associate droids, in the hope that one of them might encounter BB-8 on his ident signal.
Two hands, one gold and one red, rose slightly in realization.
Why, that's brilliant! I will do just that. R2, you're a genius!
Pivoting, he rushed off to implement the concept, leaving behind a very quiet droid. The fleet of Star Destroyers stood off the white world. Spectacular and isolated, with a mean surface temperature varying from merely cold to permanently arctic, the planet had been altered. Its mountains tunneled into, its glaciers hacked, and its valleys modified until it no longer resembled its original naturally eroded form. Those who had remade it had renamed it Starkiller Base. Hollowed out of one snow-covered mountain was a central control facility. At its heart was a great assembly chamber that held hundreds of workstations and their attendant seats. At present, it was occupied by only three figures. One was Kylo Ren. The second was General Hux, who wore his particular mask internally. Seated on the raised platform that was the focus of the chamber was the blue-tinted hollow of Supreme Leader Snoke. Tall and gaunt, he was humanoid, but not human. The hood of the dark robe he wore was down, leaving visible a pink, pale face so aged it verged on translucence. Poorly reconstructed, the broken nose added to the asymmetry of the damaged visage. So did the position of the left eye, which was situated lower than the right. Beneath wispy gray eyebrows, they were a startling cobalt blue. Long since healed over, old cuts and wounds marred the chin and forehead, the latter scar being particularly noteworthy. Seated in shadow, the tall, slender form loomed over the other two men. Other than the face, only long, spindly fingers showed from beneath the dark robe.
The droid will soon be in the hands of the Resistance,
Snoke declaimed, his voice deep, soothing, and very much that of someone in complete control.
Giving the enemy the means to locate Skywalker and bring to their cause a most powerful ally. If Skywalker returns, the new Jedi will rise.
Ren sat impassive, neither commenting nor visibly betraying his thoughts. Hux dipped his head by way of apology and took a step toward the dais.
Supreme Leader, I take full responsibility for the...
Snoke cut him off.
Your apologies are not a strategy, General. We are here now. It is what happens next that matters.
Aware that he had just been spared an unknown but certainly unpleasant fate, the red-headed officer spoke up immediately.
I do have a proposition. The weapon. We have it. It is ready. I believe the time has come to use it.
Against?
The Republic, or what its fractious proponents choose to call the Republic. Their center of government, its entire system. In the chaos that will follow, the Resistance will have no choice but to investigate an attack of such devastating scale. They will throw all their resources into trying to discover its source. So they have no choice but to investigate fully, and in so doing,
reveal themselves.
Snoke was clearly pleased. And if they don't, we've destroyed them.
Yes,
Snoke said in satisfaction.
Extreme, audacious. I agree that the time for such measures has come. Go, oversee the necessary preparations.
Yes, Supreme Leader.
Bowing stiffly, Hux turned and exited the chamber. He took long strides, walking briskly, clearly pleased with himself. Snoke and Ren silently watched the general go. When next Snoke spoke, there was an intimacy in his voice, a familiarity that stood in sharp contrast to the commanding tone he had used with Hux.
I have never had a student with such promise before you.
Ren straightened. It is your teachings that make me strong, Supreme Leader. Snoke demurred.
It is far more than that. It is where you are from. What you are made of. The dark side. And the light. The finest sculptor cannot fashion a masterpiece from poor materials. He must have something pure, something strong, something unbreakable with which to work. I have you.
He paused, reminiscing.
Kylo Ren, I watched the Galactic Empire rise and then fall. The gullible prattle on about the triumph of truth and justice, of individualism and free will, as if such things were solid and real, instead of simple subjective judgments. The historians have it all wrong. It was neither poor strategy nor arrogance that brought down the Empire. You know too well what did.
Ren nodded once. Sentiment.
Yes. Such a simple thing. Such a foolish error of judgment. A momentary lapse. In an otherwise exemplary life, had Lord Vader not succumbed to emotion at the crucial moment, had the father killed the son, the Empire would have prevailed, and there would be no threat of Skywalker's return today.
I am immune to the light, Ren assured him confidently. By the grace of your training, I will not be seduced.
Your self-belief is commendable, Kylo Ren. But do not let it blind you. No one knows the limits of his own power until it has been tested to the utmost, as yours has not been. That day may yet come. There has been an awakening in the Force. Have you felt it?
Ren nodded. Yes.
The elements align, Kylo Ren. You alone are caught in the winds of the storm. Your bond is not just to Vader, but to Skywalker himself. Leia,
There is no need for concern. Despite the Supreme Leader's cautioning, Ren's assurance remained unbounded. Together, we will destroy the Resistance and the Last Jedi.
Perhaps it has come to our notice that the droid we seek is aboard the Millennium Falcon. Once again, in the hands of your father, Han Solo. Even you, Master of the Knights of Ren, have never faced such a test.
Ren considered his reply carefully. It does not matter. He means nothing to me. My allegiance is with you. No one will stand in our way. Snoke nodded.
We shall see. We shall see.
It was a dismissal. Turning, wholly preoccupied now, Ren followed General Hux and exited the vast chamber. When he was gone, a grotesque smile twisted across Snoke's countenance. Then it vanished, along with the rest of the hollow of the Supreme Leader.
I don't know what to do.
Stumbling down the sand flat that wound between towering dunes, the dazed pilot fought to recall who he was, struggled to remember why he presently found himself staggering through what appeared to be an empty desert.
His head hurt, and not just from the effort of trying to remember. Reaching up with one hand, he winced as his fingers took the measure of a lump on his forehead that had swollen to the size of a Punnelk's egg. He'd hit his head hard. It seemed to him that probably meant something. But what? Concurrence? No, that wasn't it. Concussion? Yes, he'd suffered a concussion. How had that happened? As is often the case with a jolt to the brain case, recent events came flooding back to him in a rush. Capture. Interrogation. He'd stolen a ship with... He looked around and began calling the name he remembered. Finn! Finn! Then he recalled that the renegade stormtrooper who had helped him escape had ejected from their stolen TIE fighter as it had plunged out of control toward the surface of... Jakku! That was it. He was on Jakku. As for the absent Finn, there was no response to the pilot's anxious shouts. Depending on the angle and speed of ejection, his new friend could have come down anywhere, Poe knew. His name. That was his name. Poe Dameron. And he was a pilot in the Resistance. But if he was a Resistance pilot, where was his flight jacket? Probably still pinned in the TIE fighter he had only just managed to set down in one piece. He remembered the crash now. Remembered recovering consciousness just in time to set down, more or less intact, trying to get out of the cockpit before something blew, his jacket caught and holding him back, struggling out of it and then tumbling clear onto the sand. All of it recalled through the haze of his concussion. He was alive on the surface of Jakku. Alive and alone. There was no way of telling if Finn had been as fortunate. More important, where was BB-8? The droid could take care of himself, he felt. Poe knew if he could just get off-world and reconnect with the Resistance, a way could be found to recover the droid. All he needed was a ship. He'd already stolen one. Could he steal another? First, he reminded himself, he would have to locate one. And before that, he would have to find water. Morning brought neither. Only a relentless sun and a cloudless sky. He
He continued onward because, given his present situation, one direction was as good as another. The salt flat ran between high dunes. It was not a road, exactly, but it was a way, and the hard surface offered much easier footing than the soft, shifting sand that rose above him on either side.
"Keep low," he told himself, "and you might come across a depression. Where there was a depression, there might be dampness, and where there was dampness, he could try to dig for water." He found neither depression nor dampness. Instead, someone found him. The whine of the approaching speeder was unmistakable. Squinting against the harsh light, he turned. A dark spot appeared between the dunes, expanding rapidly as it came toward him. Flat in front and bulging at the stern, the speeder was an unlovely construct. But to Poe, at that moment, it had lines as sweet as those of the fastest fighter in the Resistance fleet. Standing in the middle of the salt flat, he began jumping up and down and waving his arms. At first he thought the speeder was going to keep coming and run right over him. Then it began to slow rapidly, angling to the right. Instead of shooting past, it came to a halt. Emitting a descending whine, it dropped slowly to the ground. A figure, little more than half Poe's height, promptly descended from the open cockpit. It was a Blarina. Mirrored eye shade swept across the broad face above the short, wide snout, and a toothy grin appeared as the speeder's scaly operator closely examined the lone human.
"A bit warm to be out walking by oneself in this country, my friend."
Poe grunted acknowledgement.
"It's not by choice, I assure you."
"And where, then, have you come from?"
The Blarina's grin grew wider, showing far more teeth than a human mouth.
"Or do you just enjoy Jakku's gentle sunshine?"
"I'm lost."
That much, at least, was not a lie, Poe knew.
"I hit my head, and I'm lost."
The Blarina let out a soft hiss.
"Lost indeed! Where's your speeder, my friend?"
Poe thought fast.
"Same place I am. Lost."
"I'm Naka Ayit, a scavenger of sorts."
Once again, he looked Poe carefully up and down.
"I might just scavenge you."
Poe tensed. He had no weapon, and in the event of a confrontation, he was hardly in any condition to offer much in the way of physical resistance, even to a Blarina who was half his size. The species to which the speeder operator belonged was not especially strong, but they were very, very quick. This one, he reflected, was also fast with words. Well, with words he could still defend himself.
"It's said that the Blarina are an exceptionally hospitable people."
Naka Ayit's grin gave way to a frown of astonishment.
"You've heard that? That must be referring to some other Blarina. It certainly doesn't sound like me."
Poe spread his hands wide.
"You'd be wasting your time on me. I have nothing worth scavenging."
Raising his eye shades, Naka stared hard at the pilot out of gold-hued eyes, crossed with slitted pupils.
"Then what exactly are you doing out in this wasteland with nothing?"
Poe felt himself swaying. He was hot. He was thirsty. He was exhausted. His head hurt. And except for this irritating Blarina, he was alone in the middle of nowhere on a nowhere world. He was also possibly a little bit crazy from the heat. Otherwise, he likely would not have said what he next said.
"I just escaped from the First Order by stealing one of their advanced TIE fighters. Used it to shoot up one of their Star Destroyers and crash-landed somewhere near here."
Naka stared at the human for a long moment. Then his wide eyes squinted. His scaly cheeks caught the sun as they bunched up, and he burst out laughing. One five-fingered hand wiped at the tears that trickled from the corners of his eyes.
I wet my zins if you aren't the most barefaced liar I have encountered in 20 years of scavenging on the sandbox.
He extended one lightly clothed arm.
Come with me, my friend. The Blarina do say that much good accrues to anyone who helps the mad. Liar or madman, whichever you may be, it amuses me to lend you assistance.
Lowering his eye shades, he turned his gaze skyward.
The spirits have placed you here to alleviate my boredom. Come!
If it's all the same to you...
A sun-addled Poe mumbled as he fumbled his way aboard Naka's battered speeder.
I'd be more than happy if you could just give me a drink of water.
Scrunched into a passenger seat designed to accommodate another Blarina, his knees pushed up against his chest, Poe gratefully accepted Naka's offer of a slender metal drinking flask complete with sipping tube.
I need to get off-world.
He spoke between delicious swallows.
As quickly as possible.
Of course you do,
Naka replied soothingly.
Jakku is no place for a madman.
He looked to his left.
We're not far from Nima Outpost, but I'm not going to take you there. Local commerce is more or less run by a corpulent sack of slurge who goes by the name of Platt. I've had words with him in the past, and don't wish to confront him again.
Feeling better now that he'd had something to drink, Poe felt that the least he could do was acknowledge his rescuer's predilections.
You're very fond of words.
As are all Blarina.
Naka seemed to grow slightly in his seat.
I once finished 5th in the Homeworld Soliloquy Competition. It is one of our most notable traits.
Any others?
Poe inquired. Naka's grin returned, his sharp teeth glistening in the bright sunlight.
We're also famously accomplished liars.
He glanced once more at his passenger.
I'll take you as far as Blowback Town. There's a Blarina merchant there named Ongos, who is afflicted with the sorry habit of listening sympathetically. I'll introduce you. After that, you're on your own.
The light touch of a claw on a control caused the speeder to accelerate slightly. After that, Naka Ayit went quiet. Poe was left to his thoughts. Until a gout of sand exploded from the dune off to their left. Leaning out, Naka looked behind them, uttered a loud hiss, and tromped the speeder's accelerator. Thrown back in his seat, Poe struggled to regain his balance.
What is it? What's wrong?
Without turning, a now grim Naka gestured slightly with his head.
Look for yourself!
Leaning to his right and out, Poe peered behind them. Another much larger speeder was there, and gaining. A second shot from it blew a crater in the dune face on his side.
Struth's clan.
Naka's tone was bleak.
A motley collection of grunks who can't do salvage, repair, trade, or anything else.
The speeder rocked from another near miss.
So they steal from those who can.
They're not very good shots,
Poe pointed out. This time, Naka did look over at him.
Idiot madman. If they blow us up, they acquire nothing but garbage. They shoot to disable, not destroy.
They're catching up, Poe told him. Can't this thing go any faster?
I am a salvager, not a pod racer. My craft is built for hauling, not speed.
Poe considered a moment. Then let me drive. He leaned over.
What? Are you insane?
Naka batted at the reaching hands.
No, wait, you are! Why should I let you take control of my only real asset?
Because,
Poe told him, as yet another burst slammed into the salt flat, almost directly beneath them,
I am the best pilot you ever met!
They wrestled like that for a while, before Naka finally gave in. After all, with a Struce clan speeder closing on them, they had little chance of escape anyway. As soon as Man and Blarina had switched positions, Poe turned the clumsy but sturdy craft sharply to the left and began to slow.
Giving up already?
Naka's words oozed sarcasm.
I could have done that much myself!
Indicate that we're going to surrender.
Poe was studying the speeder's controls. They looked very straightforward.
Why not? Isn't that what we are doing?
The salvager sighed.
I'll have to ask Owen for a loan. I hate starting over.
Rising, he began making gestures at the pursuing craft. No more shots were forthcoming. Watching the bigger speeder come up on them via the rear view, Poe continued to decelerate until their pursuer was near enough for him to make out the faces and assorted appendages of the now triumphant thieves. When their larger vehicle was as close as he was willing to let it come, he tilted the nose of Naka's speeder sharply upward and gave it full power. It promptly shot skyward. The sudden explosive burst kicked what seemed like half the dune beneath them upward and back, dumping the gritty shower atop the big speeder that had slowed almost to a stop behind them. Those Struce not wearing protective goggles received eyefuls of hot sand. The bulk of the grit storm instantly sank into every opening. While the Struce speeder's main propulsion system was sealed against such intrusions, not every instrument, not every component was. As Naka's craft soared over the crest of the dune, a sharp grinding noise behind them indicated that the Struce craft had ingested just enough sand to render it at least temporarily inoperable. The sound, like the threatening speeder itself, faded rapidly astern. Beside him, a gleeful Naka was emitting a kind of cackling hiss. Alien though the exclamation was to Poe, the scavenger's delight could not be denied.
Oh, joy! Oh, pleasurable delight!
A hand reached over to clap Poe on the shoulder.
Saved by a madman!
The Blarina pointed.
Our destination lies that way. I find myself suddenly amenable to letting you drive. Are you really with the Resistance?
Yes.
Compared to a stolen TIE fighter, the speeder was easy to operate.
Then you truly are crazy!
Poe glanced over at him.
We of the Resistance prefer the term courageous.
I see little difference.
Leaning back in the passenger seat, Naka Ayit picked up an incisor with one claw-tipped finger.
I owe you, my mad one friend. Beyond just picking you out of the desert, I owe you most thankfully. I will intercede with Orn Goss. One way or another, we will get you off Jakku.
I'm grateful.
A relieved Poe told him simply.
Grateful? What matters the gratitude of a madman?
Naka replied, but he smiled as he hissed it. Despite their escape, all was not tranquil aboard the Millennium Falcon. After having acquired it, Unkar Plutt had paid for only minimum maintenance, with the intention of preparing it fully for flight only if and when he found a buyer, so components that had worked immediately following liftoff from the surface of Jakku were now starting to show the lack of attention, and others were turning balky. The alarms, however, were functioning quite efficiently. Finn did his best to ignore them as he continued to work on Chewbacca's injury. This was made difficult by the Wookiee's habit of grabbing Finn by the neck or shoulder and shaking him violently every time a fresh spasm of pain shot through the hirsute shoulder. Each time, Finn managed to settle the patient down and continue his ministrations, but his neck was getting sore. Up in the cockpit, it seemed like every time Han and Rey managed to squelch one problem, a new one materialized to take its place. The present difficulty was a matter of degree. Or rather, degrees. Ray indicated a readout whose numbers were too high for comfort and rising steadily.
Drive containment, Taurus, is overheating.
Yeah, Han grunted. You know why?
A second's glance at the co-pilot's console was sufficient to supply the answer.
Field instability.
Yep.
He wasn't going to elaborate for her, Ray realized. If this was some kind of test of her competence... No, she decided. What was occurring within the hyperdrive system was too dangerous for a test. She frowned at the controls.
Need to recalculate and readjust the relevant parameters.
Recalculate?
He eyed his own instrumentation.
Yeah. Hold on. Readjusting.
A number of telltales suddenly went to red.
Power overload!
I can fix that.
Ray's fingers flew over her controls.
Field instability is approaching critical. If it overshoots, we won't be able to stabilize it.
She worked frantically.
Maybe there's an auto-flux modulation system that hasn't been activated yet? If it hasn't come online with everything else, try transferring auxiliary power to it.
Auxiliary?
Han yelled at her.
I'm on it.
A moment later, a deafening roar came from the vicinity of the lounge. Rising from the pilot's seat, Han headed in its direction.
Be right back. You've got the car.
Utterly unaware of the tremendous compliment she had just been handed, she nodded absently while continuing to manipulate controls. In the lounge, Finn was finishing the bandaging of Chewbacca's injured shoulder. For someone so big, he reflected as he ducked and dodged the bellowing Wookiee's reactions, Chewie was proving to be an uncommonly difficult patient. As a huge, shaggy hand grabbed Finn yet again, BB-8 scurried clear. His voice muffled by an armful of fur, Finn tried to make the Wookiee appreciate the situation.
Chewie, you got to let go of me, understand? I can't secure this bandaging properly if I can't see what I'm doing. Or move. Or breathe.
The Wookiee nodded apprehensively.
Okay, then. Help me out here. Let go.
Chewbacca promptly shook his head no. Exasperated, and by now more than just sore, Finn yelled toward the cockpit.
I need help with this giant fuzzball!
As Chewbacca roared anew in pain, a grim-faced Han left what he had been doing and joined them.
You hurt Chewie,
he growled.
You deal with me.
Hurt him?
Finn continued to struggle with Wookiee torso, shaggy arms, and bandaging.
He's almost killed me 6 times!
Reaching out, a massive hand grabbed him by the collar. Finn responded with a hasty smile.
Which is fine, really.
Han hesitated a moment, eyed his wounded co-pilot, and then headed back to the cockpit. Dropping back into his seat, he muttered unhappily as he scanned one readout after another.
The hyperdrive blows, and there'll be pieces of us in 3 different systems.
Abruptly, all the alarms stopped. A satisfied Ray sat back in her seat. Confused, Han peered over at her.
What did you do?
Bypassed the autoflux and recalibrated manually.
She nodded toward the console.
Field is stabilized. Total containment temperature is dropping back toward normal.
She let out a long breath and glanced across at him.
Anything else?
He let out a short, appreciative laugh.
Yeah.
He rose once more from his seat and retraced his steps toward the access corridor.
Keep monitoring ship systems. And give me a shout if it looks like anything's likely to blow up in the next couple of minutes.
Back in the medbay, he knelt alongside the supine Chewbacca. The Wookiee was still moaning, but not as forcefully now that the analgesic Finn had administered was starting to work. Carefully, Han checked the bandage wound while reassuring his co-pilot.
No, he murmured. Don't say that. You did great. They got you with a lucky shot.
He smiled.
Can't look everywhere at once in a running fight. Kanji clovers, Guavians, Rathtars. Rathtars! trying to hold them all off while covering for me and making it to the ship? I'm surprised any of us made it. He rose. You're gonna be fine.
He turned to Finn, who, with BB-8 standing beside and watching, was trying to activate the holo chest set. Looking on, Han hesitated. This was difficult for him, but it needed to be said, and he meant it.
Good job on Chewie. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Glancing toward the bed alcove, Finn addressed the patient.
Thanks for not breaking my neck.
The Wookiee replied with a guttural, modulated rumble. Finn chose to interpret it as an apology of sorts. Sliding a finger across a flush control brought the chess set to life. The pieces steadied themselves before gazing up at Finn. Then, in lieu of any forthcoming instructions, they started fighting among themselves. Annoyed by his lack of control, Finn tried to turn it off, but that apparently required finding and nudging a different control. Han suppressed a smile.
Peculiar guy, this one, Han thought. He can deal with a battlefield wound, but not an ordinary chess set. He shrugged.
The man's capabilities and lack thereof were none of his business. Instead, he asked,
So, fugitives, huh?
Finn nodded and indicated BB-8.
It's the map he's storing. The First Order wants it. And they'll kill anyone who tries to keep it from them.
Rey arrived to join them as Finn finally managed to deactivate the chess set.
Ship systems are stable. I made sure before I left everything on autopilot.
She indicated Finn and the droid.
They're with the Resistance, and I was with them. So I guess now in the mind of the Order, I'm with the Resistance.
Resistance fighters?
Han eyed Finn with new respect. And not a little skepticism. The younger man had handled himself well enough in the brawl on board the freighter, but that only proved he was a survivor, not a fighter. Further evaluation could wait until later, Han told himself. Right now, he looked to BB-8.
Let's see what you got.
Dutifully, the droid rolled into a suitable position. A lens brightened, and abruptly, the lounge was all but filled with an enormously detailed and complex star map. Nebulae, solo stars, translucent splashes of concentrated dark matter, and entire solar systems were displayed before them. Even Chewbacca sat up to have a better look. Finn was impressed, and Rey in awe. But Han found himself frowning. Moving forward and into the three-dimensional representation, he tracked system positions and locator stars. One finger traced the outlines of a particularly bright and well-known nebular cluster. Like everything else in the map, it was brilliantly depicted. It was also only half there. He turned to the others.
This is accurate, but it's not complete. It's just a piece. I can tell from the location of the breaks and from what's only partially shown.
He grunted softly.
Ever since Luke disappeared, people have been looking for him.
Rey spoke while drinking in the details of the marvelous but imperfect chart.
Why'd he leave, anyway?
Han pursed his lips, thinking back, remembering.
He was training a new generation of Jedi. There was no one else left to do it, so he took the burden on himself. Everything was going good until one boy, an apprentice, turned against him and destroyed it all. Everything Luke had worked toward, gone. Luke felt responsible. He walked away from everything.
Finn's tone was respectful.
Do you know what happened to him? Does anyone?
Han turned to him.
There have been all kinds of rumors and stories. When people don't have access to facts, they invent what they'd like to believe, what they think others would like to hear. The people who knew him best think he went on a personal quest. looking for the first Jedi temple.
Rey had been quiet for a while, absorbing everything in awed silence. She could no longer contain herself.
The Jedi were real?
Han half smiled, to himself as much as to her.
I used to wonder that myself. A bunch of mumbo-jumbo is what it sounds like. Some magical power, holding together good and evil, light and dark.
He paused, his voice fading.
Crazy thing is, it's all real. The Jedi, the Force, it's true. All true.
He brought himself back to reality.
Just as it's true what Finn here said. The First Order will kill all of us for that map.
An alarm sounded, but this one was different from the flurry that had preceded it. Chewbacca started to rise, but Han put out a hand to prevent him.
No, you relax.
He glanced at Finn.
Don't risk the good work of our friend here by stressing what he's done.
He headed for the cockpit.
This is our stop.
Chapter 11.
There may have been more beautiful worlds in the galaxy than Takodana, but if so, they were unknown to Han. Verdant and mild, flecked with bands of white cloud and necklaced with small seas and brightly reflective lakes, it appeared before them as the Millennium Falcon dropped out of hyperspace. With him in the pilot's chair, Rey co-piloting, and Finn and BB-8 standing behind, the cockpit was crowded. Within Finn, expectation mixed with uncertainty as he gazed at the unfamiliar world ahead.
What are we doing here?
You wanted my help. You're getting it,
Han told him.
We're going to see an old friend.
At the same time, he noticed Rey staring fixedly out the forport. She seemed on the verge of tears.
Hey, you okay?
I didn't know there was this much green in the whole galaxy,
she said in awe. He watched her for a moment longer, then sent the Falcon into a shallow dive, heading for a well-remembered location. Speed stripped away the clouds around them, revealing what looked like endless evergreen forest. As he slowed the ship to suborbital velocity, other features lingered in his passenger's gaze. Rolling hills, rivers, and lakes that glistened like sheets of silver foil. A towering stone castle came into view as he prepared for touchdown. Looking at it, Finn could not tell by whose hands or other manipulative appendages it had been raised. The study of architecture was not a subject on which incipient stormtroopers tended to focus. One side of the castle was dominated by a long freshwater lake. Of more interest to him, the other side featured a landing area, crowded with small freighters, not unlike the Millennium Falcon. Like the Falcon, the majority of parked craft looked worn and heavily used, but well maintained. Disembarking, Rey and BB-8 marveled at forest, lake, and castle. Limping slightly, but otherwise disdaining his wounds, Chewbacca ignored the rustic panorama in favor of inspecting the underside of the Falcon. Still on board, Han popped a storage unit and began rummaging through the contents. From among the jumble, he withdrew one used blaster after another, placing them carefully to one side. He was still at it when Finn came up behind him.
Solo, I'm not sure what we're walking into here. A few details would be welcome.
Half turning, Han looked back at him, said quietly,
Did you just call me Solo?
Sorry, Han. Mr. Solo. Look, I'm not asking for information lightly. I'm a pretty big deal in the Resistance, which puts a real target on my back. Just need to know that there won't be any conspirators here, okay? No First Order sympathizers? because they'd be looking out for me now, and I don't need any surprises.
Surprises? Han echoed thoughtfully. Yeah, you're right. No matter where you go, no matter who you happen to run into, the galaxy's just full of surprises.
His expression turned serious.
Listen, big deal. You've got another problem. A bigger problem. Much more serious than worrying about First Order sympathizers. It's this. Women always figure out the truth.
He handed over a blaster. Finn took the weapon and turned it over in his hands, giving it a professional examination. It was a substantial piece of ordnance.
Always,
Han concluded. Rising, he brushed past the younger man, heading for the exit way. Finn watched him go, racked with guilt. But there was nothing he could do about it. Not now, anyway. Outside, Han interrupted the sightseeing. Prey was barely able to contain her delight at their surroundings.
I can't believe this place is real. It doesn't even smell real.
He nodded understandingly, gesturing at the surrounding forest.
You got all this greenery pumping out all this oxygen. Makes a big change when all you've been sucking is recycled ship atmosphere.
He offered her a blaster.
You might need this.
Ray looked down at the weapon, then back at him.
I've been in one of two tough situations. I can handle myself.
I know you can, and that's why I'm giving it to you.
He pushed the weapon toward her.
Take it.
She contemplated the blaster, drawn to it as she was to any piece of new and unfamiliar tech, and finally accepted it, hefting it carefully.
It's heavy,
was her appraisal. He considered.
Had he guessed wrong? You do know how to fire that.
Trigger,
she shot back.
You aim it and pull the trigger.
A bit more to this model than that. Put a little more effort in, get a little more result out. You've got a lot to learn. You got a name?
Ray.
She raised the weapon and aimed it at an imaginary target, careful to keep the muzzle pointed well away from Han or anyone else.
Ray, I've been thinking about taking on some more crew.
She smiled at him.
According to what you told us earlier, that didn't work out so well for them on your last job.
He brushed it off.
Needed a bigger crew for a bigger job, with a bigger ship.
He pointed to where Chewbacca was continuing his inspection.
Not so much with the Falcon. Maybe bring on one more. A second mate. Someone to help out. Someone who can keep up with Chewie and me, and who's smart enough to know when to keep out of the way. Someone who appreciates the Falcon, and her hidden qualities.
She cocked an eye at him.
Are you giving me a job?
He met her stare without blinking.
It doesn't pay right away, and I'm not going to be nice to you, and...
Pleased as well as taken aback, she interrupted him.
You're offering me a job.
I'm just thinking about it.
Han corrected her.
Well, if you did, I'd be flattered.
Ray paused.
But there's somewhere I need to be.
Jakku,
Han said knowingly. Ray nodded.
I've already been away too long.
Han put a hand on her shoulder.
Let me know if you change your mind.
Turning, he called toward the ship.
Chewie, check her out the best you can. With luck, we won't be here long.
His gaze returned to the girl standing before him.
You've smiled too much, Ray.
Ray nodded obligingly.
I'll work on it,
she said with a wide smile. Once Han was satisfied that, if need be, the Falcon could depart in a hurry, they started toward the nearby castle. While Chewbacca remained behind to attend to a number of minor fixes and nurse his injury, the rest of them were able to enjoy the forest and the occasional glimpse among the woods of examples of indigenous wildlife. These invariably proved small and non-threatening. Approaching the impressive structure
and its odd trapezoidal stonework, Finn found himself unable to estimate its age.
"Why are we here again?"
he asked.